Well, good evening, folks, and welcome to the Creation Science Hour. This is Kent Hovind and Jonathan Sampson talking to you live. Are you still alive, Jonathan? You've had a long trip.
Long trip. Well, we went up to Illinois this weekend.
This is May 11th, by the way.
Yeah, last week we went up to Illinois at one of the new guys here, Heath and I, to go up there and see our hometown. And it was really a blessing because there was a friend of mine up there who had gotten involved in some very serious drugs shortly after I came down here.
Uh-huh.
And God was just so great to make the possibility. He actually got fired up and set on fire, not physically, but spiritually, you know, seeing one of your videos. And he and I got to witness to a couple teenagers inside of McDonald's up there side by side. And it was really a blessing to see a life like that change from your material, which a lot of these people out here, if they're listening, well, what's the material? Well, Dr. Hovind, over the last 14 or so years, has compiled 17 hours or so of videos, seminars, combating this silly theory that people evolved from rocks some 3.5 billion years ago.
And somebody needs to straighten them out.
Yeah, you're doing a fine job at it.
We know how to do it. That's right. All right. Well, let's see. If you want to call in, you can be on the program today several different ways. You can call in 850-479-DINO, 850-479-3466, or you can AOL Instant Message us. And I just got to click on this little guy, right? There we go. Okay. Or AOL Instant Message us at Dr. Dino Live, DrDinoLive, and we'll be glad to take your AOL Instant Message. Or you can email us, but that'll get into a pile that may take a few days to get filtered through, because we get a blizzard of email here. Anyway, I just flew in about a couple hours ago. I've been stuck at the Houston airport for 4 hours in a thunderstorm. And why I went from Cincinnati to Houston to Pensacola, I don't know, but that's the way they do things. But I got to see most of the United States today from the little bitty window on an airplane. Had a great meeting last night. I got to speak at God's Bible School last night. It was something. Yeah, I was very impressed. It's a school been there about 100 years in Cincinnati. Great spirit, good bunch of students there. Spoke for 3 hours on creation, evolution.
God's Bible School.
I didn't see God there, but I'm
impressed. They have his picture up on the wall, graduating picture?
No, I don't think he graduated from there. Actually, founder.
Might be founder.
It was great, though. Good bunch of kids there. Anyway, if you want to call in, folks, 850-479-DINO. Here we go. A testimony has been sent to us. Oh, let's see. Announcements. We forgot the Southeast Creation Conference. We have 8 new debates coming out. Did the covers come in while I was gone? That's all we're waiting on. Is it printer? You don't know? We'll announce tomorrow. We'll find out. Any day now, we should be getting the covers and have all the debates available. Let's see. And those are fun. 8 of them to add to our series. It'll be 20 debates in the series. Okay, here's and Southeast Creation Conference this September. If you want to come, $50 for a great conference. Going to have some awesome speakers here. Dr. Carl Ball from Glen Rose, Texas, going to be here. Been a friend of mine for years. Dennis Swift from Beaverton, Oregon, will be speaking. And Jack Cuazzo from New Jersey, who is a dentist for years and is one of the world's experts on the Neanderthals. He'll be speaking, as well as quite a few other interesting skits and activities, and plus a tour of the world-famous Dinosaur Adventure Land, including free lunch. You can't beat that. It's going to be, you're going to all wish you'd stayed longer if you come down for that. Okay, here we go. Testimonies here. Lee Wells writes in. I teach biology at public high school in Gastonia, North Carolina. I've currently been watching your video series at church. I wanted to let you know that it is an awesome series. I enjoy science and have always found evolution a hard subject to teach. But I always told my students that I believe that all life was created at the same time, 5,000 to 6,000 years ago. Thanks for all you do, Lee. Boy, man, a public school biology teacher teaching creation. Jonathan, this makes number about 9,000. Praise God. So if you're a teacher out there, we want to help. You do not have to teach all the stupid stuff in the textbook where they tell you you came from a rock 4.6 billion years ago. Teach kids the truth. Don't lie to them. And you public school teachers out there might want to get our video seminar part 4, Lies in the Textbooks. That seems to be the most helpful for public school teachers. And I don't tell people you should try to get evolution out of the schools or get creation into the schools. I don't think either of those should be done. I think all theories should be discussed. You shouldn't try to ban any theory. However, I don't think you should lie to students to get them to believe a theory. And that's my objection, is there are lies in the textbooks that are used to support the evolution theory. Take them out. Stop lying to the kids. We got enough volume there, John? That green thing's not bouncing up very high. Does that mean something? Okay. If you can't hear me, call in. That's good, right? If you don't hear me, raise your hand. Yeah. Here we go. Jeff Howard says, I enjoyed hearing your Sunday evening and Monday night at UNF, University of North Florida, my alma mater. Your knowledge of the Bible and presentation is commendable. I have shared your website and the experience with numerous people. Please keep your crusade going for the truth of the Lord. Jeff. Well, thank you, Jeff. Appreciate that. And tell the folks that, you know, that's where I debated three professors at one time over there, university. No, that was at the, that was two professors at once, where they wouldn't let us to videotape it. They said, if you videotape it, we're walking out. They didn't want videotape. So. But if the folks at University of North Florida are willing, I would be glad to come back and debate any number of professors at a time. Maybe 10 or 15 at a time would be more to their liking. That's fine. Perfectly fine with me. On a couple simple conditions, I get half the time, and we talk about one topic at a time. Simple enough. And we'd be allowed to videotape it. So then I did three at one at, down the road at Daytona Beach, Florida. Three against one a couple of weeks ago, and that debate's soon to be available. It's all done through editing, putting intro and closing on, and editing in slides is all we do. It's only changes. We don't make changes. We just make the slides more visible by editing them in our super-duper Building 1 editing department. Here we go. Henry LaFleur writes in, Dr. Hovind, I saw your DVD about 6 months ago. My daughter brought it home from school. She goes to University of Louisiana Lafayette. It was the Garden of Eden video. That's video number 2, folks, by the way. Everybody refers to our video series. We've put out over 1 million videotapes now in 6 languages. They are not copyrighted. You can get them, copy them, give them to your friends, and get people saved. The 17-hour seminar contains over 6,000 visuals, very thoroughly footnoted, documented. It is $99 for the whole series. That includes the seminar notebook, which is also now available on CD-ROM. If you want to get the seminar notebook on, is that on the website yet, Jonathan? Seminar notebook on CD-ROM. They can order that. That way they can search by word or by topic or by author or whatever. I think that's our 22nd edition of the seminar notebook. We add stuff all the time to that thing. Started off pretty lousy looking. But at least do something, you know, then improve it if you can. That's our philosophy here. Okay, anyway, saw the Garden of Eden one. The surprising thing was we believe in the same thing. We didn't know all the science that was involved in the creation. We just took it on faith from oral history of the, from the elders. I'm a Native American from the Huma Nation. My family and I thank you, and God bless you, your friend Henry LaFleur. Awesome. So the Indians have oral tradition about a Garden of Eden also. Most cultures do. Because there was a Garden of Eden, and there was a flood, and there was a Tower of Babel. And many, many, many cultures have that. Okay, here, AOL instant message. Golf Urat. Now, there's a name. Golf Urat writes in. Dr. Hovind, I have to take issue with your theory on evolution. Mainly, I take issue with your theory on the evolution of silverware. Where do chopsticks fit into your theory? And if chopsticks did evolve, you have to get two of them in the same place to make them viable. Wow. Now, he's got a point, Jonathan. What could you eat with one chopstick? Only things that could actually be pierced and
skewered.
Yeah,
you'd have to stab your food.
Yeah, it'd be well, you got me on that one, Golfy Rat. I think you're right. You'd have to have two.
Sort of how the woodpecker kind of gets their food at times. Their tongue is kind of like a spear, and they just stab their food. So maybe the chopstick, which is pretty long, maybe that evolved into the woodpecker's tongue, which would answer that riddle of where the woodpecker's tongue came from.
Chopsticks are made out of wood normally.
Yeah, and then you have the woodpecker. Oh, man.
Egg. We're onto something here,
look
man.
Look at this.
Let's apply for a government grant. I think $30, $40 million, we could solve the riddle.
We could figure it out.
We work on it. Anyway, he says you have to get two chopsticks to evolve in the same place. He says, just kidding. I think you're a great man doing great work for the Lord. Thanks for all your work to get the word out about creation. I love your show. Well, thank you, Golf Urat. Appreciate that. And feel free to write in or call in any time. If you want to get on the program, folks, AOL Instant Message is Dr. Dino Live, D-R-D-I-N-O-L-I-V-E. Or you can call 850-479-DINO, and the lovely Diane is standing by over there to answer your phone call. If you don't want to be on the program, but you just want to order materials or get a catalog or just to talk to Diane, cheer her up. I don't know if she's – I've been gone all week, so I don't know if she's down in the dumps or not. Probably she's doing fine, though. But call over there, 850-479-DINO. Okay, here's JMK 1611. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image or any likeness or anything that is in heaven above or in earth beneath or in the water under the earth. What image would that be from the water under the earth. Wow. That's a good point. The Bible does mention the water under the earth in Psalm 24 and Psalm 136. Most of the water that's now on the surface in the oceans was actually under the crust of the earth. That came shooting to the top when the fountains of the deep broke open. But don't grave an image of anything that is in heaven above or that is in the earth beneath or that is in the water under the earth. That's an excellent thought, JMK 1611. I don't know, but I'll have to think about that one. Images under the earth. Oh, you got me on that one. I'll work on that. Okay, here we go. Frederica Bonte writes in. I really like your site as well as the seminars, but I hit a small snag that you are very probably able to solve. Concerning Grand Canyon, it's explained that the two great lakes, Hopi Lake and the other one, overflow because of the flood etching out the Grand Canyon. Remark, not final question. Shouldn't that overflowing water run straight instead of twisted? No, anytime things erode, like a dam erodes, if the water goes over the top of a dam or a levee along the side of the Mississippi or something, it doesn't necessarily erode a nice straight line. It depends on all kinds of factors. You know, if there are any hard spots or boulders or trees in the way, it'll erode. The water chooses the easiest path, pretty much. Grand Canyon could not possibly have been formed by the Colorado River. The top of Grand Canyon is about 4,000 feet higher than where the river enters the canyon. For heaven's sake, rivers don't flow uphill. Not in Florida, anyway. They might at Harvard. Here's a statement number two. The layers you see in the walls are formed by the flood or any other layering of cliff sites. But wasn't this wall, Grand Canyon Ridge, there before the flood to hold these lakes? Okay, Frederick, I think your problem is here. You're assuming that the flood made Grand Canyon, and I would disagree. Grand Canyon was probably made a few hundred years after the flood. The Bible says in Psalm 104 that the mountains arose, the valleys sank down, and the water rushed off. So you would have hundreds, if not thousands, of naturally trapped lakes by the rising mountains. And they would get just trapped by virtue of the mountains rising up and wrinkling. And if they ever got too full from rainwater or snow melt or something from higher elevation, they would overflow at their lowest point. And if it was hard enough rock, it would just simply continue as a natural lake and have a little stream flowing out of it and streams flowing into it. But if it was soft sediment, then it may actually start eroding the spillway and eat it back 270 miles like the Grand Canyon has done. It probably started eroding at actually the far end, the western end, and ate its way backwards. Most of them erode that direction. The water flows to the west, and the erosion cuts to the east. So I think you're assuming here in your question that Grand Canyon was formed during the flood, and I would disagree. I think the layers were formed during the flood, but the canyon was formed maybe a few hundred years later. Question, when were the layers of the Grand Canyon Ridge formed? Was this during when the water covered the earth? Must have been seriously muddy then, too. Greetings, blessings, Frederick. Yes, Frederick, I think the flood would be extremely muddy. Most floods are. And as just the tides going up and down during, 8 or 10 months or however long the earth was covered. Noah's in the ark for 12 months. Well, we don't know how long different sections of the earth were covered. Some parts of the earth might have only been covered for a few days. Some might have been covered for the whole time. I don't know any way to tell that. Have to watch the video, probably DVD when we get to heaven. Unless God's got the next generation beyond DVD, whatever that's going to be. Virtual reality disc, right? VRD. Maybe it'll just be reality. We get to watch the actual thing.
You made a pretty good point a long time ago. You were saying, we got a break. We'll talk about your point later.
After the break, Anton, hang on there, and Evan, we'll be back with you in just a second, folks. Tell your friends to listen in to drdino.com. All right, folks, welcome back to the Creation Science Hour. This is Kent Hovind and Jonathan Sampson talking to you live. He's trying to keep up on the messages over there. If you want to call in, you can call 850-479-3466. Now, Jonathan, Diane just had me listen to it on her speaker. It's coming in terrible.
That's Truth Radio, actually, over on the East Coast had a fiber optic cable cut today. So the only option they have right now, actually back up, what she's listening to is one of their poor quality ones because they have a bad sound card. Richard went ahead and gave me a call today. So if some of you out there are experiencing horrible sound, you might want to try a different connection. There's three different options on truthradio.com.
So they go to truthradio.com and three connections they can make.
Yeah, they can go to truthradio.com and they'll have a Windows Media Player, Real Audio, and MP3. And they need to try either Real Audio or MP3 because Windows Media Player is horrid today.
So they cut a fiber optic cable. Now, I thought, according to evolution, complex things just happen automatically.
That's what they've been telling us, but I think they're trying to hide this.
So it doesn't work.
Yeah, the West Coast experienced it today. So.
Yeah. Good. All right. Anyway, if you can't hear, try another connection, Jonathan says. Here we go. Okay, Anton. Sorry for the wait here. Dr. Hey You Hovind. You know why he said that? I tell the evolutionists, you know, they'll say, Dr. Hovind doesn't have a real degree. I say, okay, first of all, I think I do. However, if you don't like my degree, call me Kent, call me Bubba, call me Hey You. Let's get that back to the topic. Okay, there we go. Did Darwin have a degree? Anton, writing from Zambia, writes in, Dr. Hey You Hovind, praise God for your insight and courage to proclaim it. Your seminars that I downloaded are spreading here in Jeffreys Bay, South Africa. Oh, ZA is South Africa? Okay. And to other towns as well. Your theory of the pre-flood canopy makes a lot of sense to me, as I had a question for many years. Did the properties of light change after the flood? If not, how could rainbows suddenly appear? The canopy theory makes perfect sense. If there was no direct light, only diffused light, and rainbows could therefore not appear, or at least not as bright. Is this a reasonable assumption? Yes, but probably a better assumption, Antoine, would be that under higher pressure under the canopy, you would simply not get clouds to form. I don't think that the conditions were even possible for rainbows with the higher pressure, which would have been because of the canopy. Don't know. Have to get to heaven and see the video on that one, or DVD, or whatever they're going to call it. Here we go. Evan Volker. Dr. Hovind, I'm a student and doing research on dinosaurs, and was wondering if you could answer some questions. Number one, what is the most convincing evidence for creation provided by dinosaurs? Wow, Evan, there are all kinds. Let's see. Just the design of the dinosaurs. He figured a giraffe has a heart that's 2 feet long that has to pump blood up to the top of his head, 17 feet off the ground. And then when he bends down to get a drink, he's got special sponge around his brain that absorbs the last heartbeat and keeps enough blood there to keep the brain going while he lifts his head back up and he doesn't pass out. That's only 17 feet. Imagine a brachiosaurus at 50 feet, or the biggest one now at 60 feet tall. They must have had an incredible design just for things like bone structure or circulatory structure. Dinosaurs, I think, show just amazing design. Scientists are baffled about the giraffe. You can imagine a 60-foot dinosaur. Okay, second question. How do you explain the same type of dinosaur bones all over the world? Oh, that's easy, Evan. There was a flood. Probably all types of animals lived all over the world before the flood, and then during the flood, they'd be drowned and scattered everywhere. So, the existence of similar bones on different continents does not prove anything for evolution or Pangaea. It proves there was a flood, exactly like the Bible says. Number three, if most dinosaurs are extinct, then why not large mammals like elephants? Well, I think even large animals like elephants would go extinct if it weren't for somebody protecting them. You know, the rhinoceros nearly went extinct. Other animals have just about gone extinct because of man's hunting. Dinosaurs, probably the same thing. They just overhunted.
There's a good question I heard a long time ago. Why aren't some things extinct, like the sheep? Why are there sheep or lambs? You know, why are there lambs?
These sheep are real dumb.
Precisely. How can they still be here when they are the prey of so many, you know, predators?
They have to be protected.
Precisely.
I had a guy tell me who raised sheep or something. I forget what the story. He says, you can take sheep around the back of the barn and they'll never find the front door. You got to lead them around, put their head in. Oh, there's the door. Okay. When I was in Australia, I saw a guy bring in probably 200 sheep off the range, and then he brought in his sheep dog. He said, now, folks, these sheep have never seen a dog, and this dog is a little sheep border collie. He said, I want you to see how quickly this dog can round these sheep up into one corner. And he started giving that border collie direction, some kind of this little sounds he would make, you know, that this collie knew, or hand signals. Man, within 10 seconds, all those sheep were jammed into a corner and the dogs running around on the back of the sheep barking. I was extremely impressed with the quality there and how dumb the sheep were. Okay, if dinosaurs are extinct, why not large animals like... Oh, here we go, number four. Do you really think the Chinese kept dinosaurs as pets? Yes, Evan, I probably do. I don't know about pets, maybe in cages for, you know, demonstrations of power or something. I don't know how it'd be hard to train a reptile. Okay, got a phone call here. Evan, I'll take your questions in a minute. I don't have a headset, Jonathan. I can hear it over here. Okay, who's on the air there?
We've got Joseph on line one.
Yes, Joseph.
Yes, Dr. Hoban. I've got a question about the collapse of the canopy with the Hoban theory.
Yes, sir.
I've been reading Dr. Walt Brown's book in the beginning. You know, he's not real fond of the canopy theory, of course, but...
Yeah, I know. I'm going to fix that.
Yes, sir. I agree. But I've got a question about that. I do think he has some good information with the fountains of the deep. But if the canopy, if the water hydroplate theory did create the comets, and let's just say he's right about that, the hydroplate theory did make the comets, how would that affect the canopy if the comets launched first and then the canopy fell?
I think it'd be a combination of things. I think the hydroplate theory says that the water would go shooting up at supersonic speeds from underneath the crust of the Earth, and I agree. And it would pierce right through. I suspect the canopy was probably only 10 or 20 inches of ice. And so the comets would pierce right through, or the shooting water jetting up could pierce through. Or by that time, it was collapsing and breaking apart anyway. So it would just be all taking place simultaneously. If that makes sense.
Yes, sir. I knew with your Hoban theory, you had the comet hitting first, breaking the canopy, and started causing the fountains of the deep to break open. And I just wondered how it would do in reverse if the comet came from underneath the canopy, how that would affect the water coming down, that sort of thing.
I think the comet probably hit the Earth as millions of fragments and probably took several weeks to finish. It'd be like a shotgun, be continually peppered. You know, it wasn't just one meteor impact. When the comet Shoemaker was going to hit Jupiter, it broke up into thousands of pieces. You know, they could see 27 of them from here. Who knows how many there really were? Maybe millions. So... yeah, I think that if you watch the Hoban theory with the idea that this ice is dumping on the Earth probably for several days or maybe even a week or two,
mm-hmm.
causing this, all take place simultaneously, then the weight of on the poles, the weight of ice on the poles and the impact would cause a shudder in the crust of the Earth, which would crack it, releasing
mm-hmm.
the fountains of the deep, all taking place, simultaneously.
So at about the same time the comets are... hitting the Earth, it would fracture the Earth, cause the hydroplates to break open, and comets come out of the Earth also that way.
Well, I think it was an ice meteor that hit the Earth. See, Walt Brown, great guy, and I recommend his site frequently on here. He and I disagree. He doesn't think there was a canopy. I say, well, then you have no way to explain the scriptures. The scripture teaches there was.
Yes,
and
sir.
You have no way to explain the giant insects. There are some giant insect fossils found.
Yes, sir, and I agree with that wholeheartedly. Yeah. I'm just trying to figure out how to work these two together then.
Well, everything's just a theory, so try to blend everything together and come up with a unified theory.
Mm-hmm. Just use a little bit of it there and just say this is just what we think.
Like a smorgasbord. Yeah, pick and choose what you want.
Yes, sir. I appreciate the time, and hope you have a good day, and hope the radio program goes good.
Sounds great. Now, where are you calling from?
Mississippi. I'm Brother Joseph McDonald. I came down to meet you a couple of weeks.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, sir. I'm on my way to Arizona next week to give a seminar out there and give my first one and get started on it. So I'm trying to sort those things out to see how I'm going to present that. So.
Well, you're going to be nervous, and you're also going to get hooked. You're going to say, man, this is great. I want to do this the rest of my life.
Yes, sir.
Okay,
I got to talk about it in the public school the other day and had fun with it, so I'm looking forward to it.
Hey, call in anytime. Let me know how your Arizona meeting goes.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
All right, folks, if you want to call in, 850-479-DINO. 850-479-DINO or AOL Instant Messages at Dr. Dino Live. Here's one from a name I cannot read. Christian Dude 040. It's green shading with blue lettering. Is that just my computer? I can't read it. That's why he has his name, so you can barely read it. Okay. He says, I have a friend at school who's a strong evolutionist. I was trying to witness to him. Then he brought up the question, well, if you don't believe in evolution, then do you believe that he cannot do it? Can you help me? I'm assuming this means that God cannot do evolution. If it's different than that, Christian dude, email back and see if that's not my question. If your question is, your friend is saying, couldn't God use evolution? Well, I'm sure he could have, but he didn't. It's not what he said, number one. Number two, that would not be a very smart God who has to, practice and play around and use misfits and death and blind chance. He would be a cruel God. He'd be a retarded God, not one worthy of worship, and certainly not one you'd want to pray to. Sadistic, basically. And there's no evidence for evolution anyway. So why should I compromise a good creation theory with a dumb evolution theory? Anyway, I see no reason to compromise at all. Okay, here JMK1611 writes in, are the Grand Canyon layers hydrologically sorted? If so, can you name the layers in order? I don't know that I can name the layers in order. I was just there a couple weeks ago at the bottom of Grand Canyon, took a helicopter ride down there with my son and his wife and baby. I guess it's been 3 months ago now. It is all kinds of layers of obviously sedimentary rock, which means it used to be mud and it's settled out in either wind or water, you know, settles out into layers. You know, you can get a sand dune, which is wind-blown sediments that can turn into rock, which is sedimentary rock also. Hydrologically sorted, what that means is during moving, as water moves, it automatically sorts particles by density, but it doesn't always do it densest at the bottom, lightest on the top. Very often, instead, it forms distinct layering. If you go to the mall and buy those things with two pieces of glass with different colored sand in between and flip it over, you may have two different densities of sand, a light one and a dark one, and yet it makes hundreds of little layers as it settles down. It doesn't just make two layers, is my point. It's just, that's the hydrologic sorting. So some evolutionists have the mistaken idea that the flood would put all the dense things at the bottom and the light things at the top, which simply is not what happens. I mean, you can show them, go to the mall and buy one of those things and say, hey, it's not what happened. So water just automatically sorts things. And Mount St. Helens showed us that when all the moving mud washed down the mountainside, it formed thousands of layers just from a mudslide. You can get a jar of dirt and add water and shake it up and set it down. It'll form dozens of layers just in a few minutes. Right there in your hand. You can watch it happen. Okay, Evan's question continues. Number 5. Do you think that since the air pressure on the earth was higher before the flood, that the dinosaurs could have shrunk to the size of lizards? Thanks for your time. Sincerely, Evan. Well, Evan, I think dinosaurs and lizards are certainly related, but I don't think lizards today could grow to dinosaurs, or dinosaurs are giant versions of the lizards we have today, though some may be. It appears that the genes for the giantism like that are simply gone. An example might be, if I gave you 500 Chihuahuas and said, I want you to crossbreed these until you get a Great Dane, it's not going to happen. Okay, the genes for hugeness are gone out of the gene pool. And I think genes for dinosaurs, for most dinosaurs, are gone, though some appear to still be alive. There's certainly a lot of sightings like, you know, Loch Ness Monster, stuff like that we cover on video number 3, which you can download off of drdino.com. Did the newsletter get up, John, the newest newsletter, the January one? You don't have the May one, which I'm about to give you when we're done here today.
Yeah, we have the February 04, 2004 newsletter online.
Okay, so the May newsletter coming out today or tomorrow.
Will be
up. It's my fault. I've been working on it. It's supposed to be an April newsletter, actually, but I'm still working on it. Okay, Debbie Taylor writes in, did we really all come from Adam and Eve? How is this possible? Oh, yeah, not a problem. Adam and Eve probably had 50 or 60 kids. They had the whole world. There's no reason to not have a bunch. You know, no food shortage, no housing shortage, perfect weather. Had God's command, you know, be fruitful, multiply, go fill the earth, replenish the earth. So, yeah, I don't see a problem. Adam married his rib. Adam's kids married sisters. And then after that, they married cousins. And then after that, it, you know, diversifies. The gene pool is pretty broad. I have 3 kids, same wife, same husband, and very, very different kids. I mean, very different. You get them the same way, you feed them the same food, you raise them in the same house, and they all turn out very, very different. Strange. Okay, Mark Bell writes in, why did it take so long for people to have children early in the Bible record? I can see where this would lead people to think biblical years, some other unit of time. This also makes me wonder about your estimation of the population pre-flood. It also makes me wonder if God said, fill the earth, why did they wait so long? Thanks, Mark. Well, Mark, one theory is that everything was just slowed way down, and you matured slowly, and you were a kid till you're 40, and then a teenager till you're 70, and then it's about time to start looking for a wife when you're 80 or 90. I mean, it was just a slower pace, perfect tropical paradise. I mean, nobody's in a hurry or a rush like we are today. Jack Caruso thinks that people matured much more slowly, and their wisdom teeth came in at just the right time as they were getting larger, and it fit their jaw just fine. So I just think probably just a slower pace of life. You would enjoy. I mean, I've been married 31 years and it's wonderful, but it's also a lot of responsibility. And there's something great about being free as far as no bills, no responsibilities. Being a kid is wonderful. You ought to enjoy that stage of life if you can. And I see people, you know, too anxious to grow up, you know, man, enjoy it where you are. Okay, here we go. Michael Schablow, S-C-H-A-B-L-O-W. Sorry, Michael, Michelle. I blew both names. Michelle. Michelle writes, "Hi, Kent. I just want to say my family and I are looking forward to seeing you in Wisconsin." That's this week. I go up there Thursday, I think. I don't have my calendar here, but we have learned a lot and questions that are being answered thanks to your good work. Thank you, Michelle. Well, thank you. Good. Thank you, Michelle. Appreciate that. Feel free to come up and say hi when I'm in there in Shatek, Wisconsin later this week. Okay, Rebecca writes in, "I was wondering, you know how it says God loves us so much that he gave us a choice and we chose sin. Well, when we get to heaven and there will be no more sin, does that mean we don't have a choice anymore? And if he did give us a choice after we go to heaven, would that start everything over again? So what's going to happen? Will he give us a choice or not after we go to heaven?" Rebecca, that is a tough theological question. Apparently, we simply don't want to sin. I don't think we're going to be able to turn heaven into a messed up place like earth. So I don't see where the Bible gives an answer to that one. Okay. Hang in there, folks. Be back after the break. DrDino.com. All right, folks. Welcome back to the final segment. 15 minutes. If you want to call in, 850-479-DINO. 850-479-3466. Call in and be on the program or AOL Instant Message us at Dr. Dino Live. DrDinoLive. And you can get your question answered, or else I'll say, I don't know, and we'll go to somebody else's question. Or if you believe in evolution, we need some of the frowny faces, Jonathan. That is hilarious on the website. If you haven't seen that, folks, go to drdino.com and go to the testimonies page, and you'll see the negative ones, the people that hate me, and their little frowny face shakes back and forth, and steam comes out of the ears. And that is so true. Wait till you see these 8 new debates coming out. How many of them have you watched?
I've only seen, actually, Heath and I have watched 2 of them to go through and make sure there weren't any problems with them, and they're phenomenal. One of them is one that I got to attend, I think, last March or around there, when you debated Michael Shermer and Kyle Frazier from Reasons to Deceive and Believe.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're just amazing, and I think they're really going to be very popular once they get out.
I think the debates, though I don't convert any of the opponents, I'm 0-90, they really help students who watch those.
Smite this corner of the simple.
Give them some ammunition.
Yeah.
Amen. Okay. Henning. This is a strange last name, Henning. Got to be from Sweden or something. B-J-O-L-V-E-R-U-D. Jolverud. Anyway, Henning, I can handle that part. Henning writes in, "I'm just wondering if you could tell me how old the Earth is and how long it is since human beings appeared. And how many different stages did it take before we are as we are today? Thanks, Henning." Or Henning. Henning, the Bible teaches the Earth is 6,000 years old. Man appeared on day 6, and we are, as far as different stages, we have probably gone through several stages of degrading, not improving. Man probably started off much bigger, much smarter, and perfect condition. And now we have degraded to a measly, 6 foot and IQs of, averaging 100 and living to be 70, 80, 90. That was absolute nothing before the flood. According to the scriptures, they lived over 900 years and possibly got bigger. We cover that on video number 2. Okay, here's Neil Purcell writes in, "I have an astronomy question. If the Andromeda system is 2.2 million light years away, how do we see it? Explain. Thanks for your time, Neil." Neil, you need to watch video number 7. The non-grainy version, available on the DVD or VHS or the website, drdino.com. Hey, Jonathan, how's it working, by the way? We don't ever get to talk other than on air here. People are getting, you said somebody donated more bandwidth to...
We've had basically a lot of people calling in and asking if they can mirror our files to basically take some of the load off of our bandwidth. We have, one T1 line here in a business DSL, which is, it's pretty good, but when you have about 10, 15,000 people hitting your site at any given time, it's really not adequate. So we've had a couple people write in and actually call in and donate some massive amounts of resources. One person called in and said, I've got an OC3 connection, which is, you know, just monstrous.
A thousand C1s together.
Yeah, basically. And plus a server just for you guys' files. Another person called in just 2 days ago and is donating a terabyte of bandwidth. Which is terrific. It's,
so you got kilobyte, megabyte, gigabyte, then terabyte. It's 1,000 gigabytes.
That's a lot. There's a lot of stuff in there.
There's even one after tera. I forget what it is, but who cares, right?
Obnoxious byte, I guess. Yeah. Something like that. But, yeah, the Lord is definitely taking care of us.
Good. So the more people donate bandwidth like that, the more stuff we can put up. Eventually we can put all the debates up online and... better take them down, because we put them up for a while. It just killed our T1.
We put them up for 2 days, and they were getting hit so hard that we had to take them back down.
It was melting the whole building.
Basically.
Yeah. Okay. Dave Ivy writes in, Dr. Provan, I love your website. I thank God for what you're doing. I also like to keep informed on the opposing perspectives, which you assist in to some extent with a healthy helping of sarcasm. But I would love to see more. Oh, I wonder if it means more sarcasm. That I can handle. Believe it or not, Dave, I tone it down to get it where it's at. Have you only received one reply to your $250,000 question? Could you post more of your opposition? So Christians who are interested could better understand the people around us and their confusion. Jonathan, is there only one reply up there on the $250,000 offer?
Yes.
Over the years, I've had 4 or 5, I think, attempts. They've all been just silly stuff, you know?
We had one from Casey Caldwell, who apparently got pretty upset because they didn't win the $250,000. They didn't get anywhere near close. But I actually lost that one, I think, when I had my computer reformatted.
Okay, so Casey, yeah, the computer was reformatted. We had a little technical problem here. So if you want to send it back in, we'll be glad to post it. So people
Have one on the network somewhere. And if not, Casey started a little anti-Hoban website, so I'm sure I could pull it off of there as well.
Sure, okay. So. There's another 1,001 now, anti-Hoban websites. Some of these guys have nothing to do, you know. Here's one by the French guy, Anonymouso. Anonymouso, Anonymous writes in, I think one more point should be included in your answer regarding the amount of water needed to cover mountains in the flood. The mountains would not need to be completely covered. The flood would only have to necessarily submerge the base of the mountain up to the point above the tree line, or that area where the oxygen is too thin to support life. Since the peak of Mount Everest, for example, cannot support human life for several reasons, it need not be covered. I disagree. If you raise the ocean level, the air goes up with it. So you don't really have the thin air problem in a flood situation. Noah, regardless of the elevation of the water, is always going to be at the same air pressure, roughly 14.7 pounds per square inch with standard temperature and pressure. So... that, I don't think, is correct logic. Raising, you know, flood water would not... the air goes up with it.
So. Besides, the Bible states that the water was 15 cubits above the highest mountain.
Right.
It doesn't say 15 cubits above the base of the highest mountain.
Yeah.
And Mount Everest probably wasn't exactly like it is today, if it was even there.
It's been going up here. They've measured it here recently. It's gone up 5 feet or something. It's growing. The whole area is lifting up. All the Chinese people on the edge, you know, having a lot of kids, and it's getting heavy, and it's pushing up over in Nepal. I don't know. Who could? Here we go. Isabel Keller writes in, in school, I learned that scientists replace the gene that is responsible for the making of fruit flies' eyes with the gene responsible for making of mice eyes. The fruit flies, after this switch, still got eyes that were normal to them. Is that... it's that really able to happen? And if so, how? Does it have to do with evolution in any way? They took the, let me see if I understand your question, Isabel. They took the gene for fruit fly eyes out of the fruit fly gene and put in mice eye gene, and they still got fruit fly eyes.
It's close. Actually, I read about this. It's called a homeotic mutations. They take a homeobox gene, which is this. We could look at electrical wiring in this building and next door. Basically, what they did is take in the light switch from a mouse, you know, saying from a neighbor's house, and putting the light switch in your house.
Okay.
Which it's, you know, there it is a similarity, but it doesn't prove evolution. It just triggers it. And Answers in Genesis has a very amazing article on homeotic mutations.
Okay. But it's still got the fruit fly eye.
Yeah.
So apparently there's what some people think called a pseudogene that switches on, like, oh, hey, this gene's gone. Let's replace it, you know. Kind of a backup like your computer has. I think the gene code has a lot of that backup mechanism that if something goes wrong or is damaged, it just something else kicks in takes over. Okay. All right, here's Twinkle 100%. There's a name. I have a non-Christian friend who thinks that Dr. Ovin has recently filed bankruptcy for DAL. Is this true? Where on earth did they come up with this stuff? No, it is not true. Man, dear friend, this is ludicrous. No, not true at all. I don't think it is, but my friend says it is. Well, tell your friend to call me and get his straight from the source. I'll be glad to answer any questions he's like. No, we've not filed bankruptcy for Dinosaur Adventureland. We're doing fine. We've had 37,000 visitors now since we started. Okay, who we got on the line, Jonathan?
Yeah, Patrick on line one.
Patrick, go ahead. What's your question?
Hello, Dr. Hovind.
Yes.
I have a question. Big Bang states that something expanded with a subatomic particle, and you stated that nothing or that something can't come from nothing.
Not without God doing it.
Yes, without the assistance of a higher power. My question is we have seen subatomic particles be created in a vacuum. How do you explain this?
Well, first, I'm not sure that that's true, because what they're saying is they appear and then disappear immediately. So I don't know that was kind of evidence would hold up in a court of law that say the particles are. And what's happening is possibly they're breaking apart an atom and discovering a new piece that was already existing, but not necessarily creating something new. Does that make sense?
Yes, but a subatomic particle, even in a true vacuum, then there would be no matter for an atom to break apart.
I don't know that anybody's ever created a true vacuum.
A black hole would be a true vacuum, something that has absolutely no matter.
Would be quite the opposite. It'd be an enormous amount of mass, if black holes even exist. See, all that stuff is theoretical. It's the black holes, the white holes, the antimatter, all that stuff is theoretical to try to rescue the Big Bang Theory, but it's not actually scientifically provable, is my understanding. Go ahead.
Do you believe that antimatter is theoretical even when we created it in a laboratory?
How would you know you created it? And who
told
you?
It would annihilate after coming in contact with matter, it does remain for nanoseconds.
Well, who sees that in that nanosecond? I mean, is there physical evidence of this, or just this? That's why I say it's theoretical.
But we had seen it, and also the fact that there are anti-universes, which can be determined by the fact of their spin and how they react in relation to galaxies made of matter.
Well, I don't know who's teaching you that, but none of that stuff's ever been documented. It's all, you know, it's necessary to have that to rescue the Big Bang Theory, but it's not science fiction. It's not science. To say that there's antimatter comes into existence for a nanosecond and then reacts with matter and disappears. First, I don't think that's true, nor do I think it's been proven. Secondly, it wouldn't matter. Just like you can create a momentary vacuum for a few seconds and then use it in your vacuum cleaner to suck dirt in the other end, but it doesn't stay. You know, nature abhors a vacuum. Something's going to go into it. That's the principle behind a vacuum cleaner. So, yeah, I think they do teach this kind of stuff in school, and they'll say, well, scientists saw this in the laboratory. I'd like to see this. You know, who can observe something in a nanosecond?
A camera couldn't it?
Well, you know, I suppose it could, but has it? You know, that's the question. Is somebody just making up a story? Because, you know, you can't give me a jar of antimatter. Nobody's ever observed this. This is all theoretical.
It cannot be contained.
Well, I don't think it can even exist. I think it's all a fairy tale. But you might want to talk to Russell Humphreys. Has he done anything on that? Did you work, Jonathan, on ICR's website?
He has done work on black hole cosmology and white hole cosmology and different theoretical entities that are out there. But as far as, I think it was particle, subparticle, and antimatter, things like that. I'm not sure if he's done anything specifically on that.
Yeah. What may be happening in a laboratory, they may be breaking apart an atom or a molecule and discovering a new piece that they didn't know existed, but that would not necessarily prove, you know, something new is being created. It's just something new is being discovered. You understand the difference there?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, you break open an apple and find out, oh, wow, there's seeds in here, you know? Okay.
Thank you.
So you're welcome. All right, folks, call in. You got about 2 minutes left. 850-479-DINO, 850-479-DINO, or if you want to, AOL Instant Messages, Dr. Dino Live.
If that is true, that matter is being created, does that not negate the first law of thermodynamics? that matter cannot be created or destroyed?
Right. Where would it come from? Yeah.
It just doesn't seem logical. I mean, even, you know, someone can claim that it's scientifically, you know, valid to create matter from nothing. But even a third grader can tell you that's stupid. Where is it coming from?
Yeah, it doesn't happen. Well, the idea that you can transfer energy to matter or matter to energy, that is understandable. Obviously, you can burn a piece of wood and turn it into energy. Now, can you get the energy and turn it back to a piece of wood?
You know, some of these, a lot of these things probably seem very convincing because in their equations they have so many variable things, so many different theories and hypotheses that they all come together and say, uh-huh, well, this will make antimatter. Well, hold on, you have 50 things before this that you're putting together.
Right.
Yeah, that you have no evidence for. We'll take some antimatter, we'll take a black hole, we'll take a little bit of peanut butter here and toss it over there, and we have a particle.
Yeah.
It's like, hold on a second.
Yeah, it makes a good story.
It's definitely very interesting, but it doesn't belong in...
It belongs in a Dr. Seuss book. Oh, time is up. All right, folks, Julia, hang on. We'll get to your question tomorrow. And miss another Anonymous in the pile here. Okay, see you tomorrow, folks. Tune in. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.